I always enjoy working with new people. I've been doing Supernova. Well, just let me give you just a little bit of my background so you know where I'm coming from. I worked for 36 years at Merrill Lynch. I retired on my 36th anniversary in 07. It wasn't a bad time to get a hold of some Merrill Lynch stock and sell it, much better than 08. A lot of that time, I produced for 13 years. I managed for the rest. And my last 13 years, I managed the Nashville and Memphis offices, plus a couple of smaller ones in Tennessee. And during that time, I worked for Rob Knapp when Rob was rolling out Supernova. So I know the process well. I know it from Merrill Lynch, and then it's been refined significantly in the 5 years that I've been working with Rob Knapp at Supernova. For the rest of my life, I live just a little bit south of Nashville, Tennessee. Today I'm in Destin, Florida. I'm here with my wife and two of our grandkids. They're out at the beach, and I get to talk to you all. I'm not a big beach guy, so this is working out well for everybody. Tell me, usually when people reengage with us, there is something that they feel that they missed in the first 12 weeks. Tell me why you all want to reengage with us.
Well, I just want to make sure that I'm utilizing it efficiently. I think that, the client contacts for me have been kind of the main source, and the, 100 households and the butlers and that. But I don't think I really tackled the mastermind groups or maybe the center of influence. I need to hit a little bit harder. Referral process, that type of approach.
Okay. Chris, could you get a little bit closer to the speaker?
Sure.
I was
worried about that. Yeah, I was worried about that. Hold on, let me pull the So anyway, like I was saying, it's going to be the mastermind groups I wanted to focus a little bit more on, the center of influence, and the referral process as well. And also some coaching on how to get a junior advisor to hand off some of the accounts, and maybe some thoughts on how to train that junior advisor to go. Probably the best bet would have them go through the Supernova process. But anyway, so I'm still working on that because my accounts are kind of starting to load up again, and it's hard to pass them off because I can't find a junior advisor who focuses on the Supernova. So it's tough to get them on the track, so to speak.
Well, I'd love to talk with you about that. Not today. A lot of what I did at Merrill Lynch, I think I'm going with memory, about 90% of our business came out of teams. So I've got a lot of experience putting teams together. Unfortunately, I had to take a few apart, which made me better at putting them together. So something I'd love to talk with you about, but let's tackle that a little further down the road. Tell me just a little bit about your practice. What do you think you're going to do this year?
Oh, can you hear me now? A little bit better?
It's better. It's
better. Okay. Probably do 1.25, and I'm still a sole practitioner. Part of that
okay.
is I have about 100 households. Then I have right about that 50 butler mark.
So it's 100 households plus 50 butlers?
Yeah.
All right. Now, I'm a little confused, Chris. I did a little research, and I see Harbor Wealth Consulting Group, and I see you, Mike, Perry, Diane, and Dina. Are you all not a team, or are we just talking about your practice here?
Yeah, no, actually, we kind of had to disband that team. But Mike and I, we still kind of, I wouldn't say we're teamed up, but we still kind of bounce ideas off each other. And then Deanna's sick, but Diane is here.
Okay. And Is Perry no longer part of the team?
I'd say no.
Okay, and then the Diane and Dina support you and Mike solely, or do they have other responsibilities?
Diane has other responsibilities, and Deanna actually have other responsibilities.
They're supporting other FAs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Diane's still supporting Perry, right? And that's on Perry and Mike. Yes.
I'm making notes. All right. Let me just talk a little bit about. I heard what you said you wanted to focus on. Didn't overlook that. I want to see just to get a little bit more of the structure. With 100, how are you? Are all 100 clients scheduled?
Yes.
All right. So you have some pretty big days. I mean, you've got to talk to 100 clients once a month. You're talking to your schedule with 5 people a day. Just want to make sure I've got that right.
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. All right. Did you get much pushback when you got this start with these people? Are there people who told you they did not want to have monthly schedule contact?
Yeah, but they're on there anyway. I have them on the system, and I have the days that I usually give them a call. The only reason why the ones that didn't want to be scheduled is because they're working. My retired clients like the schedule, but my clients who are actually working, it was tough to get them on a schedule. So I still have them on that day, and then I just try to catch them on that day. Usually I can.
Got it. Now, what kind of contact are you giving the butlers, Chris?
For about once a quarter.
Okay. All right. Got it. Now, here's the key question from our point of view, as you measure your organization. If you were going to take, let's just say you walked in to Dina and said, Dina, I'm going to take the week of, I'm going to make it up, November the 11th off.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last time you ever have to have that conversation. Does your team know how you want to be rescheduled? If you can say, Rob, I can tell Dina that I'm going to be out for a week. She knows exactly how to take care of everything, all my scheduled appointments. If you say, yep, that happens, then I feel really secure moving on. If you can't say that, then we need to spend just a minute of time on making sure that everybody knows how you want to be rescheduled.
I would think she would know, but she would want confirmation from me. You know, it wouldn't be as simple as you just said that, okay, I'm going to take a week off and there we go.
Chris, you're fading on me again.
Yeah, I would say it would kind of be 50-50. I mean, she would know, but she'd want confirmation from me on how I want it to be rescheduled. And so, no, it wouldn't be as simple as you just said.
Well, let me spend a couple minutes on that, and then if you need clarity or want to discuss it later or ask questions, we'll do that. We do not want you to reschedule non-review month calls. Did Stan make that clear?
No.
All right. I'm getting ready to simplify your life.
Good. And by the way, I found the email. I was working with Rob Brown.
Okay.
Just to let you know that.
We do not reschedule calls. Here's the way that we have found works best. A week before the contact, an email goes out, Ms. Brown, just a reminder that you have your monthly scheduled meeting with Chris next Tuesday at 10 o'clock. You want to give a client just remind them. I know they know that's their time, but it's just a good practice to remind them. So, Ms. Brown, and this is a non-review month, Ms. Brown sends an email back and says, gosh, I can't keep that appointment. I've got grandkids in town. I'm traveling, whatever. The response is, thank you for letting us know. Is there anything I can do for you? And again, this is coming from Deanna. Or is there anything I can pass on to Chris? 99% of the time, the client's going to say, no, everything is good. And the response is, terrific, we'll talk to you next month. Do you have that thought process, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Clients understand that. Everybody on this call has had a medical professional call, and they can't keep an appointment. Everybody understands this. So always an email goes out a week ahead of time to remind. If the email comes back and says, I can't keep the call, the response is, thanks for letting us know. Is there anything I can do for you, or is there anything I need to pass on to Chris? No, everything is good. Thank you. We'll talk to you next month. Now, if it is a review, Ms. Brown says, I can't keep that appointment. We're traveling that week. Deanna says, well, thanks for letting us know. Chris is available here, here, and here. Which of those work best for you? That's why I can say, if you walk in and say, I'm taking the week of whatever off, clear my calendar, the non-review calls don't get rescheduled, and two-thirds of your calls are non-review calls. I mean, out of the 12, 8 are non-review calls, so two-thirds of your calls don't need to be rescheduled, and Deanna has your calendar in front of her and knows where you have openings. It's painfully simple once you grasp the concept, and you know you do not reschedule non-review month calls. Clear on that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay. So that's your goal. Now, let's talk. Supernova is two basic parts, folks. It's organization and it's growth. So let's slip a little bit over onto the growth side. Are you getting many referrals from your clients?
I'd say yes. Not as many as I think I could. And one of the reasons for me is because my day is so full, it's almost to the point where it's like when I get a referral, I go, oh, okay, how am I going to fit this one in? So it's, so that's kind of my, I mean, I'll take them, but it's definitely, it's a sprint to try to service them with, not being able to hand off some of these other clients.
Okay. Chris, I am always on time and I always end on time unless I have time and you want to go further. Today we're probably going to take longer than the top of the hour. Do you have a few extra minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. If you look at, I mean, let's just picture in your mind one of your favorite clients, not necessarily your biggest client, but the one that one of the clients you really enjoy. You got that person in mind?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the client's first name? I don't want a last name. What's the first name?
John.
Okay. When is the last time John gave you a referral?
Oh, I'd say probably about 12 months ago.
Okay, do you remember who it was?
Yes.
Was it solicited or unsolicited?
Unsolicited.
All right, and was there anything that drove that brought John to give you a referral? Did something happen that you did? What caused him to give you a referral?
Probably because one of his employees needed some assistance. So it was an employee of his.
Now, again, today's call is not a straight line. Let me take a step off the path. What's your minimum? What's your absolute minimum?
Minimum asset size?
Yep. For somebody to get into your practice, we're not talking about people in your practice now, but for somebody to be in your practice, become a part of your practice, how much, what do you have to have in assets?
Probably about $500,000.
Okay. So if I came to you with 450 and I'm in a distribution mode, not an accumulation mode, are you going to turn me down?
Depends on if it's a referral from John, I probably wouldn't.
Okay. This is really important as we get into the things that you wanted to focus on. When I hear you talk about centers of influence and mastermind groups, what we're really talking about is growing the practice. Agreed?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So here's the way that I think is very effective to present your minimum. Your minimum is $500,000 unless there are extenuating circumstances. And I'll point that out. If I had $30,000, but in November I was going to have a $2 million IRA rollover, you'd go ahead and open that $30,000 relationship, right?
Yeah.
Of course you would. So that's the extenuating circumstances. My minimum is $500,000 unless there are extenuating circumstances. The people have to hear the $500,000. You don't say everybody – when you say you have a minimum, what it's saying is that you don't have room for everybody. That's not arrogant. It's just you cannot – you can only provide a premium level of service for X number of people. Agreed?
Oh, yeah.
My minimum is $500,000 unless there are extenuating circumstances. Now, another reason that you have a minimum – and I'm going to come back to John's referral to you. Another reason that you have a minimum is you have to control the capacity because you cannot let the growth of your practice compromise the service you're giving to existing clients. You have that thought process?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, sometimes, many times, advisors are reluctant to have a minimum because they don't want to look like they're ungrateful or they don't want to look like they're, uppity or whatever. It's got to be there so you can always maintain a superior level of service. So, now I'm your advisor. I'm your consultant. I'm not your boss. I'm your consultant. I'll always tell you what I think is the right thing for you to do. Your decision is in it is how to execute. So if John brought you a $450,000 referral and he knew your minimum was $500,000, do you think, and this is a question, do you think you're sending a mixed message?
No, I think I'm being pretty straightforward. I would probably tell them that I could sit down and talk with them a little bit, but I probably couldn't take them on as a client.
You would talk with them, but you would pass them off to somebody else?
Or just say I couldn't take, or yeah, I could do that, or I could just say I couldn't take you as a client, but I could, you know, kind of guide you in the right direction. So then I feel like I did a good thing for John, and hopefully I'm doing a good thing for his referral.
Okay. And do you see how you're strengthening your brand?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, does John know that you have a minimum of $500,000 for new business?
I don't think I've ever specifically stated that to him.
Okay. If you remember back to Supernova, one of the goals for the first 4 weeks was to roll out your new service model or hit the reset button on your practice, however it was described to you. Did you have those conversations with your clients to let them know about the monthly contact, so on and so forth?
Oh, yeah.
Was part of that letting them know what your minimum was?
I probably on a few, but I don't think I was very consistent with the minimum. I was too focused on the scheduling.
Yeah, and I understand that. You got to get that one right. What I would suggest that you do, and this isn't a separate phone call, this is a tag on, I would make sure that all of your clients know that you have established a minimum for new business. Because what I want them to know, you've gotten a referral you didn't want. And because you're a nice guy, sometimes you take it. If you get referrals you don't want, part of the reason is clients don't know our minimum. So what I would ask you to do is to have that conversation, again, with your client. It might start a great conversation. Why are you establishing a minimum? Well, I have to control the number of people in my practice. I can never let the growth of my practice compromise the service I'm giving to my existing clients. And then the tag on to that, and I know I'm giving you a lot, it's all on the recording, is I also want to control the number of people in my practice so I always have room for people who fit my ideal client model. So are you seeing the importance of, you know, again, we're talking about growth, but to grow, in my opinion, you have to have a confidence brand that you can recruit to. You're not inviting people, Chris, into those old practices that you've seen in your career. You know, somebody's got an A, B book, a 1-2-3 book, A, B, C book, whatever.
Yeah.
That's not the way you grow. You grow by always maintaining your service model and not getting too many clients. Does all that fit together for you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep.
Okay.
This is Mike Silvernagle. I have a quick question there.
Sure.
I think that makes sense of letting the clients know that you have a minimum. You say, you know, add that as a tag on to the call. How would I do that? What would that sound like?
Mike, did you have the conversation with your clients about the scheduling and all of that?
I did, yes. I don't think I mentioned anything about a minimum.
Well, it's a great question. Here's the way I would phrase that. Let's say you made those calls last April. Again, I'm just making it up. Ms. Jones, as you remember, right, we talked in April, and I had made some refinements to my practice, monthly schedule contact, multi-generational and fully implemented planning, and making sure and a rapid response to any questions, problems, inquiries you have. We talked about that in April. One other thing that I have done is I have established a minimum for new business. And the reason I'm doing that is I can't let the growth of my practice compromise the service that I give to my existing clients. Now, Mike, that's what I would say. What we have found is the best thing is what our thought process is put into your words. You and I phrase things differently. But the bones, you refer back to the call in April and say, another thing that I have done is establish a minimum for new business. Well, Mike, why are you doing that? Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm establishing a minimum to control the number of people in my practice. I can never let the growth of my practice compromise the service I give to people like you. Make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. What if they don't ask? They just say, okay. I mean, that sounds like it'd be an opportune time to kind of lead in for asking for a referral.
Well, we're not going for a referral right then, Mike. We're setting the groundwork for going for a referral. We're tightening up your brand. So you say, Ms. Jones, I've established a minimum of $500,000 for new business unless there are extenuating circumstances. And then they say, oh, I got that. Well, Ms. Jones, the reason I'm doing that is because I can never let the growth of my practice compromise the service I give to people like you. So if they don't ask, you tell them anyway.
Okay.
All right. Now, you were a little bit quiet there. I don't know you as well as I'm going to know you in a couple more sessions. Is that comfortable to you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Now, let's do one other quick thing. And I know this is probably a retread, but it makes sense. If Mike, if you looked at your top 10 clients by assets,
okay,
what would you guess is the average in assets of your top 10 clients? Just guess.
$3 million.
Okay, so here's the whole thing. What I don't want you to do, there are people who would look at $500,000 minimum as a fairly small amount of money. I'm talking about prospective clients. So here's the way that you present the whole thing. My minimum is $500,000 unless there are extenuating circumstances. Having said that, it's important that you know that a disproportionate share of my business is driven by people with around $3 million. And that's true. If you looked at your top 10, Mike, that's going to represent a disproportionate share of your business. Your top 10 give you a lot more than whatever the next 10. Correct?
That's true. Yes, right.
Okay. So I don't want prospects to think of $500,000 as you're somebody who handles $500,000 relationships. That's your minimum. The clients and prospects make up funny things. I was talking to one of your FAs in Colorado a couple years ago, and she had just moved her minimum from $250,000 to $500,000, and she got a call from a CPA who had referred to her in the past, and he said, before I put you all together, tell me what your minimum is. And she didn't want to look like she was ungrateful for the call, so she didn't say 500, she said 250, and the CPA's response was, it's that little. So think of some FAs are reluctant to have a minimum because of what they think clients will make up. Don't overlook the people who are going to look at the fact that you have a minimum as a strong brand. You don't take everybody, not because you're arrogant, but because you just don't have the time to service everybody. You got that, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the minimum is a big part of your brand. Now, let's go, let's spend a little time, let's be specific as you can. Chris, when is the last time you started a referral conversation?
I would say probably like a systematic referral where I'm like going off of all my 100 clients, that type of thing, or just like one-offs or what?
Just whatever. When do you think is the last time you started a referral conversation? I don't care how it started. Maybe you were sitting across the table from your good client and just felt right to start that conversation, whatever.
I would probably say probably last month is I asked for a referral.
Okay. And was there anything that keyed you to ask that question?
I think they brought it up. They kind of led me in. I don't know the specific language they used, but the conversation was kind of struck up about how they knew some friends, and they were talking about some friends, and then I I just said, hey, I am taking clients, and if they're interested in talking with someone, just, you know, you can pass them my name, something like that. Nothing real formal, okay. But just.
That works. When the best time, in our opinion, not the only time, but the best time to have a referral conversation is when clients you give value and the clients recognize value. We find it the best way to get those conversations started. Now, so here's how clients recognize value, folks. It's usually not, hey, Chris, you bring a lot of value. That's not the way people talk. They say, Chris, I really appreciate these monthly calls. Chris, I really appreciate the planning you've done for me. Chris, I really sleep a lot better at night knowing you are managing my money. Chris, would you agree all of those are recognition of value?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So now I know that this was covered before, but are you using that script that you got when people are recognizing your value?
No, I'm not using a script.
Okay. All right. Well, let's spend a little bit of time here. This is as easy as it gets, folks. Now, everybody's different. But for me, this is the easiest way to get conversations started. And what Rob Brown talked to you about was a script from a book, or partially from a book, by a gentleman named Bill Cates. Does that ring a bell?
No, not to me.
No.
Okay. All right. Here's what I would like for you to do. You got a clean sheet of paper in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I want you to do. Now, again, you guys have been doing this for a while. Scripts, you think of scripts are for rookies. What I want you to have is a script in your words, so when the opportunity presents itself, you all know exactly what you're going to say or not say. Because every time you're with a client, if you start a referral conversation, they're going to start running from you, and it's going to come across as insincere. So here's what I want you to write vertically. The letter V, V as in Victor, underneath that the letter I, underneath that the letter P, underneath that an S, and finally an A. So when a client recognizes value, that's when this process starts. That's the V. Here's what you must do if you don't do anything else, is you have to validate it. You have to make sure the client heard you. What a lot of FAs do is say, oh, shucks, that's just what I do. That's not fair to the client. They've given you a gift. You got to say thank you. Chris, I really appreciate this plan you've put together. I feel a lot more comfortable now about my retirement. That's the V. They've recognized value. What you have to do is say, thank you for saying that. I work really hard to provide that level of guidance. Whatever they've complimented you on, you repeat it back just so they know you heard them. Does that make sense, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You've got to validate it. And now, in a millisecond, you decide whether this is the appropriate time to have a conversation. Not every time is appropriate, and a lot of advisors shame themselves. They're not asking for a referral from a client every time they see them. That's crazy. So you, in a millisecond, you make the decision whether it's appropriate. And let me be ridiculous to make an example. If you're at a wake and Mr. Brown died, and Ms. Brown says, oh, Chris, oh, John sure did love you. You did a great job for us. That's probably not the time to start a referral conversation. Would you agree?
Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
Okay, so you make a decision. Now, if you make that decision, you say this. You've said thank you for saying that. And then you say, Do you know anyone else who would appreciate that same type of planning? You asking specifically around what they've complimented you on. You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the I. The I stands for importance. If you ask confidently, clients will know it's important to you. You don't do this, well, Ms. Jones, I know I've never asked you this before. I hope you No, ask confidently. They've just complimented you on a value. Do you know anyone else who might appreciate that same type of planning? So Ms. Jones thinks a minute. She says, well, Chris, I'm drawing a blank. And that happens. The people don't wake up in the morning and say, how am I going to give old Chris a referral? That's just not the way people think. They got things in their life. So Ms. she's drawing a blank, and she says, I can't think of anybody. And the P stands for permission. Well, Ms. Jones, you have a minute to brainstorm, or whatever word you might want to use. Sure, Chris, I'm happy to do that. And then you get the S, which is suggest. Do you know anybody, can you think of anybody you play tennis with, you travel with, who's getting ready to retire? You know how to ask that question. You know your clients well enough that you can ask the question. And if she still draws a blank, and it could feel uncomfortable at this point, here's what you say. Thanks for thinking about it. Just know I'm never too busy to help people like you. And you're out. That's what Bill Cates calls you've planted a seed. I worked with a Morgan Stanley guy in Lexington, Kentucky, and there's no embellishment in this story. From his lips to my ears, he was doing a little over a million. He had 38 clients. 38 households. And he started a referral conversation, and the client stopped him, and she said, Harry, I didn't know you took new business. Now, for us on this phone, you know, you just said, how can that be? Well, clients don't spend a lot of time worrying about your business. So you've planted the seed. So imagine this picture. Yesterday, Miss Jones is playing golf with her best friend, and her best friend is just whining about never hearing from her advisor at Merrill Lynch. She's just had a conversation with you the day before. She's going to be more likely to introduce the two of you than if she hadn't had that VIPSA conversation with you. You got it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there's one more letter there, and that's the A. Because some of your clients are going to say, not necessarily because you started this VIPSA conversation, but just because they want to give you a referral, you say, do you know anyone else who would appreciate this same level of planning? And Ms. Jones says, I can't believe you're asking me that question, Chris. My sister is absolutely distraught about never hearing from Merrill Lynch. Here's what comes next. She says, I'll have her call you. And my experience, maybe your experience, is when clients say that, that call seldom comes. So when she says, you got to talk, you really need to talk to my sister, she's really unhappy with Merrill Lynch, you say, terrific. And here's the key. If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of her? And she may say, well, why don't we meet for coffee? Why don't we get her on the line? Why don't we, whatever. What I know for sure is in this example, Ms. Jones knows better how to get to her sister than you'll ever know. And then, Chris, you may say, well, I'm just more comfortable having her call you. You got to stop with, that's the end of the line, but that's where you were going to end up anyway. So if you were me, how would you go about getting in front of her? And then you shut up and listen. This all starts with making sure that you're alert for people recognizing value. Once they recognize value, you confirm it. No matter what you're going to do later, you're going to confirm it. Gosh, Ms. Jones, thank you so much for saying that. I work really hard to provide that type of peace of mind. You know,
yeah, I've used
else.
That. I've used the advice script before, that last part you mentioned there, and that always works real well. And I like the way you led up to that. That's great.
Yeah, well, again, I try to be kind here. Service in our industry is inconsistent, to be kind. I have a friend in Nashville who moved a $5 million relationship because he had not had a meaningful conversation with his advisor in 9 months. Folks, that kind of stuff happens. When you have something special, a concierge practice for a limited number of people, that's very attractive. And when you get in front of people and instead of positioning yourself as the world's greatest stock picker, which you aren't, or fund picker, and you focus on service, that really sets you apart. So what I would really strongly urge is for you all to be very alert about recognition of value. And when you get it, make sure you confirm that you heard it. Now, if you want to go into the VIPSA script, go ahead. If you're not quite comfortable with it yet, you make yourself a note and you circle back a month or two later. Ms. Jones, when we had our meeting back in October, you mentioned that you mentioned how much you appreciated my planning. I was just, as I was getting prepared for our meeting, I was just wondering, is there anyone else you know who might appreciate that same level of planning? So if you're not comfortable with a script, make sure you write down that people recognize value and what that value was. Make sense?
Yep, it does.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'm going to send you, and all I've, on my group email, I just have you and Mike. Should I expand that or just leave it at that?
Diane, you want to be on it?
Okay. That should be fine. I'll forward anything on to Diane.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to send you a couple of documents. And one of them is, I tell you what. I think I've already got it loaded here. Bear with me a second. Are you by your computer?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Okay, I just sent you something. Tell me when you got it.
Okay.
I sent it to you too, Mike.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. Here's what I want for homework for next time. Let's start with the what you can learn from your best clients. You have that one in front of you?
Yep.
All right. I would like for you to look at your top 10 clients and answer these seven questions for each of your top 10. I don't want you to spend a lot of time on it. Like one of them is how long have they been in your practice? If it takes a lot of digging, just give me your best estimate. But just for example, you mentioned John a minute ago, Chris. Would he be in your top 10?
Yes.
Okay, so I want to know where John came from. I want to know how long he's been with you. I want to know where he is in the planning process. I want to know if you're his only advisor. I want to know the status of his will. I want to know how you think John would describe you to a friend. And then I want you to answer when is the last time that he has given you a referral. It's a fairly short exercise, but I think things will jump out at you that we will discuss next time. Now, another thing that I want you to do is I want you to have your brand firmly in your mind. I want to have your practice on one piece of paper. And you can see here it says Jackson Polk Wealth Management. just picked two names, well, two presidents from Tennessee. I just picked it out of a hat. I want to know what your basic beliefs are, your basic beliefs, what clients can expect from you, and what you expect of clients. That's a big deal. When you tell clients what you expect of them, you are really setting yourself apart. So we may not get to all of this next time with this practice overview, the Jackson Polk thing. Just give me a couple. Write a couple basic beliefs, a couple things that clients can expect. Basic beliefs are, the client's interests come first. Transparency. Things like that. You're a CFP, Chris. If you
Yes.
into the, if, pardon?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
If you go, so am I. If you go into the just Google Code of Ethics CFP, you'll mm-hmm. see a lot of. I'm not suggesting you copy those. I'm just suggesting those. You're going to see some phrases, some things that will probably help you define who your basic beliefs. Everybody has basic beliefs, but it's amazing to me how many FAs can't talk about them. So give me two basic beliefs, two things clients can expect, something a client can expect from your practice is monthly scheduled contact, for example, and what we expect of clients. We expect clients to honor scheduled appointments, things like that. You're not just some guy hanging out hoping somebody will do business with them. This is who you are. This is how you do it. This is what you expect. Got it?
Got it.
Okay, so the first part of the exercise, pretty simple. The next one's going to require a little more thought, but we're not going to have the finished product on your what we call a practice overview. We're not going to have that for a couple of sessions. We just want to get that started. Now, let me give you my cell number. It's 615-473-1701. If you've got something that you're stuck on, you've got a question, you want to practice the VIPSA script, whatever, don't hesitate to call me. If I can't pick up the phone, I will call you back. If you're in the ditch, I can get you out quicker than you can get yourself out. So you can either send me an email, and you've got my email address on that thing I just sent to you, or you can pick up the phone and call me. All right?
Hey, great. Thank you very much.
Well, between now and the time we meet, be observant for people recognizing your value. Very, very important. All right?
All right, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Okay, thanks.